Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Karwoski.
Welcome to the Social Network Show. This is Dr. Jane Karwoski. I'm an experimental psychologist who is avidly interested in things online and networks and connections. And with me is Jim Nico, the founder and CEO of Social Network Intermedia. Today, we are going to be privileged again to speak with Dori Clark. And Dori Clark, as you may remember, ran away from home at the age of 14. And went to Smith College, and there she graduated at 18, and she has had many adventures since then. So, Dori, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure to speak with you guys.
Thank you, Dori. You're the best in my book, and you know that I prove that every single day. Okay, here we go.
Okay, and Dori's the author of Reinventing You. And we have a few questions for you. Actually, Dori, I wanted to get some questions from you, and then you can also answer them. So the questions I'm wondering about is, say you were at a National Association of Broadcasters conference, which I understand you were at and spoke at last year, right?
I did, yes, just after my book Reinventing You was released. It was one of the very first conferences that I spoke at.
Oh, boy. I bet they got a lot of good information about that book since it was front burner. And so we, Jim and I, have been privileged to have a presence there at something called the Women's Room, which is a breakfast for women at who are attending the conference. And one of the things that we're going to be doing, or the thing we're going to be doing there, is talking with women there about their brand and social media. So if you were a broadcaster or media person. Of course, there's going to be people who are in the support roles of that in technology and so forth, but I would imagine a great many of them are broadcasters, either on TV or radio. And what if you were in their shoes, what would you be most wanting to know about how to craft their brand as an individual and what they need to know?
Well, I think as a starting point, and this is possibly a little bit morbid, it's taken from my own experience as a newspaper reporter who lost my job early in my career because of the decline of the print news industry.
Uh-huh.
A little different, of course, in broadcast. I think it's a little bit less dire, although there's a lot of changes to the industry in general. And so I think that for a lot of people who are involved in media of any stripe, one of the biggest concerns when you think about branding is how transferable is my brand? I think that number one, you want to have a strong brand and recognize that you need to in order to stay competitive, because largely it is a shrinking market. And so you, if you're playing a zero-sum game, you have to definitively be able to demonstrate that you are the best and that people need to retain you specifically for a very good reason. But I think a lot of people probably in the back of their minds are a little bit concerned about their future long-term prospects, and they may be interested in if there are ways that they can simultaneously burnish their brand in the current context, but do so in a way that leaves them open to future possibilities in other fields if they need at some point to have a fallback plan.
Sort of diversify a bit?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or, you know, diversifying your skills for sure, but also finding ways, good broadcasters do, to tell the story in different ways to appeal to different audiences.
Well, speaking of telling stories, do you have an example that you can give us to make this a little more clear?
Yeah, certainly. So I think that, you know, one story that I like to tell, specifically from the broadcast world, actually, is in Reinventing You, I profile a woman named Hank Phillippe Ryan, who is a television reporter in Boston for the past 30-plus years. She's been very successful. She has her own segment called Hank Investigates, and she does consumer and investigative reporting. So she's kind of a crusader for the people of Boston, and you know has won many Emmys in the process and built a great career. But as has long been the case, there's kind of a general awareness that the television news business is not always the kindest to older females, and that sometimes one's career prospects get a little perilous after 40 or certainly after 50 because they seem to like to hire younger, cheaper iterations. And so with this in mind, this was, you know, certainly something that that Hank was aware of. And, you know, she has managed to have a very successful and longstanding career. But, this was something she was aware of generally and was kind of concerned about. And so at a certain point, about a decade ago, she actually decided that she would diversify in an exciting way. She had a young intern who was working with her, and the woman said, you know, Hank, I'm writing a romance novel. Will you read it and offer, you know, some edits or some feedback? And Hank said, well, of course, sure. And as she was reading it, she, you know, sort of had this revelation that, you know, I could do this. Mm-hmm. She always wanted to write a book, and so she decided that she would write her own. She wrote a mystery novel, and it was very successful. And so now, a decade later, she has built up a very popular side career. She's written half a dozen mystery novels, has won almost every mystery writing award in the business, and has provided herself both with extra stimulation, but also a good fallback career in Plan B if she ever were to need such a thing.
Uh-huh. Well, that is amazingly relevant because we were involved in a discussion recently with women concerned about that very issue, that in broadcasting for women there's just a lot more emphasis on their appearance and on youth than is apparent among men. Certainly, if you watch the sports channels, you can see what I mean. Some of the old timers, they are still there, and they're very skilled, and you know, have a following that are very fond of them, and I salute them for still being in the saddle there. But you know, how many women are retained to that age? Very few, if any. I don't know. I see every once in a while someone that is maybe 50, but not 70.
Jim Nico here. Dori, again, thank you so much. Interestingly enough, if we rewind about 20 years or maybe even 50 years in the old Hollywood scenario, that Hollywood foreshadowed what I think you just mentioned in media, especially visual media and television, where the emphasis is on younger women, younger iterations. I love the way you diplomatically put that, et cetera. But one thing, Steve Martin, I wasn't there to hear it, but I heard he said one time about Hollywood, he said, they smell 50 in this town. You know, so yes. That's a little bit of it. And of course, the bottom line is in some ways what we're trying to do with our work with you and our devotion to media and women in media is really even that playing field and make for better, for worse, age not a factor. And isn't it interesting how some of these, you look at 60 Minutes, some of the people, the old men, if you will, of no offense, but I mean, they look, well, a couple of them look like they're 190 years old and they're still going at it. Would women
That's
be?
Right.
Would women be? I end my dissertation.
Okay, well, that's a indicator that we can look for in the future. So transferability, Dory, what about their brand? Now, of course, we've talked about brand means your reputation, what image other people have of you. And that brings up the question of pictures, photographs. And do you think it's a good idea to use the same photo for all your different social media and PR concerns?
You know, I think that it is, it's not a bad idea mostly to use the same photo. You want to, presumably, whichever one you're going to use is a professionally done headshot, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have something that's really good, that's really, flattering and professional, using that in multiple locations, number one, it sort of reinforces the image because it's a good photo. Number two, it makes it easier for people to recognize and say, oh yes, you know, I'm friends with her on LinkedIn and that's her picture there, and now I see that on Facebook too or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's totally fine. The only caveat is that some channels, some social media channels, if you are using them, are a little less formal. And so, I think it's perfectly legitimate, particularly if you are, if you have your privacy settings in an appropriate place and you're using Facebook as a way of connecting with your friends. I mean, you don't necessarily need to have the $1 million, headshot or whatever there. You can, but Facebook, it allows you to have a couple of photos. So one could be your headshot and the other one could be something a little bit more fun, for instance, to show a different side of you. Well, you should never go unprofessional, but I think it's fine to go less professional if the channel is something that is primarily for private use.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Then if... what can you think of other questions or concerns that someone in media and broadcasting would have about their brand?
Well, I always hear from people that we've now reached the point where everybody takes social media seriously and knows that they should take it seriously. But that doesn't mean that they have yet been inspired to do anything about it.
Uh-huh.
So I think that you get a lot of questions from people who haven't necessarily pulled the trigger yet on getting active,
mm-hmm.
but are feeling paranoid about that fact. And so they'll want to know things like, well, how much time do I need to spend really? And how do I get started? And which channels do I have to be on? And things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to raise a lot of questions for people.
And in response to that, now I believe that, you'd have the big three, is it? Or four, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. Is anything else you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are really the big ones. Google Plus is worth a mention.
Oh, yes, certainly.
Not really because Google Plus is so awesome, because it's not. But Google Plus is worth a mention simply because Google, the search engine, is so powerful, and they seem to be putting all their eggs in the Google Plus basket. They really, really are trying to use their collective might to get people to create Google Plus profiles and to be using it. And so, we'll see how successful they are in trying to exert that leverage. I mean, as it stands now, people mostly are not voluntarily using Google Plus the way that they are Facebook. They're just not. It still appears dead in many places if you go to it. But Google really wants you to use it. And so, for the time being, if your social presence is important to you and you are at a more advanced level, I mean, if you're a beginner and you're just starting, I would say, well, don't worry about it yet. But if you're at an advanced level and you want to sort of maximize your imprint and social footprint, I'd say, let's play along with Google+. Let's see how it shakes out. and kind of go from there.
Okay. And I'd like to ask you a little bit about Googling thyself in our next segment. So let's look at the idea of finding out what our online reputation really is at this point before we, in order to see what corrections and adjustments we might need to make.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
This moment of uncontrollable laughter was made possible by a 32-year-old man with little to no coordination attempting to execute a simple cartwheel. His name is Sergeant Warner, but young James, our laughing friend here, simply calls him Dad. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Thank you for listening to the Social Network Show and our interview with Dori Clark today. And we just got started on talking about what is our brand, our reputation online at this time, and how to find out what information someone else might be privy to so that we can make any adjustments necessary. Dori, what would you recommend?
Well, it's a really important question, and just the other day I was conducting a webinar for HEC Paris, which is a big European business school, and one of the exercises that we did, because the focus was on online branding, was I had people take a break, you know, from the webinar and Google themselves and see what came up. And then afterwards, you know, we had them report back and share their perceptions. And we did a little poll to see how often people Google themselves. And it's really amazing because, you know, you get at least a chunk of participants who have never Googled themselves, and then a fairly significant group of people who say, well, they've done it once or twice before in their lives. And so, you know, if we're speaking to an audience of Americans, presumably we're all a little more narcissistic than our European counterparts. So hopefully we've been Googling ourselves more frequently than that. But, you know, as I told this group of Frenchmen, and I will tell your listeners as well, I consider it an important part of your online hygiene, in fact. To Google yourself regularly. You should do it at least every month, and you should set up a Google alert on yourself, you know, using your name, because you need to know what's being said about you online. You know, it's just basic, it's to protect yourself, but it's also basic courtesy. If somebody says something that's inaccurate about you, you want to correct it as quickly as possible, obviously, but if somebody says something nice, you want to thank them as quickly as possible. So being mindful, keeping an eye open, and having a Google alert are quick ways to make sure you're doing the right thing.
Dori, I want to ask you a question here. First of all, a little context. Recently, and I'm very honored to announce that LinkedIn invited me to be a contributor there via Pulse and Today. And I think those in the know that LinkedIn is among other things, in the publishing business. Certainly, they'll be rolling that out more and more. Everyone will know if they don't know now. But one of my first posts, in fact, the second post, got somewhere in the neighborhood of 6,000 readers very quickly. And this is not comparing it to some of the work you do on Forbes, et cetera. But the point I'm making is, and I'm going to reverse just for a second, I did this comparison between Twitter and LinkedIn. But
yeah. But
the honorable mention of Google Plus, I think, is germane here. There's a book called Different by Young May Moon, who teaches at Harvard in graduate school, the MBA program. And Young May Moon, one of the things that she touted about Google in the early days, which was pure genius, is their reverse branding. In other words, they took simplicity and they really made it elegant. When all these other search engines way back when were putting more and more on their site, Google pared it down to like the most spare and elegant, simple site in the world. Isn't it ironic, though, that with all the play for Google Plus, that Twitter is much easier and self-evident to use than, for example, Google Plus? I mean, I'm in there, but I can't figure it out like I can figure out how to use Google, the search engine, or Google News. You know what I mean? It's ironic that they've gotten away from ultra simplicity, isn't it?
Yeah, Google Plus is a little complicated. It's true. I think that it's not intuitive the way that you would want. Although, one asterisk that I'll just add to what you're saying, Jim, about Twitter, it is, once you get into it, it's very easy. But I think that for newbies, it can be tricky. Actually, I was out last night with a friend of mine, and he actually bought me dinner at a very nice restaurant in exchange for a Twitter tutorial. And so we had dinner together, and then we whipped out our laptops. And I was helping him set up a Hootsuite account and figure things out. But, he was really confused about what hashtags were for and about, at replies and what is that and who can see the at reply. And so it did involve piecing some of that together for him. But I agree with you on the Google Plus front. It's not as intuitive as one might like it to be.
Asterisk accepted.
Well, now, you mentioned at replies and who sees them. There's been some controversy about the appropriateness of putting a dot in front of the at and what that does. Could you clarify that for us?
Sure. And, I'm certainly not necessarily the expert on this, but the basic deal, as I understand it, is that if you're sending an at reply to someone, which for the uninitiated means that you are starting your Twitter message with, at Dory Clark or something like that, mm-hmm. that is essentially a message that is directed at someone. Mm. So if I am, let's say I've written a post and then you guys see it and like it, you could do at Dory Clark, that was a great post. And so it's not private the way a direct message is, where literally only I can see it, but the at reply is directed to me, and so some other people can see it, depending on your settings, but generally the people who can see it in their streams are people who subscribe to both my feed and to yours. So that's the basic idea of an at reply. And the trick with if you put a period in front of it or something else, that makes the at reply more like a regular message, which everybody can see perfectly easily.
So if you put an at handle at the end of your message, then is that just the same as... Is that what the dot in front of it, the period in front of it, accomplishes?
Yeah, it basically accomplishes that same thing. So, for instance, if you want your message to have wider exposure, it is better not to have it as an at reply. An at reply is really intended to be, directed at specifically at one person. If you wanted to yell to the rafters that you thought my post was so great, you would write, "I really loved the new post, four ways to start your speaking career by at Dory Clark. And if you do it that way, where it's a mention rather than an at reply, meaning that, you know, the at Dory Clark is somewhere other than the beginning of the message, then that is a fully public tweet that everyone can see.
Okay, so now, just so I understand perfectly, if possible, so now, if I say I love the post by at Dory Clark, would there be an advantage to put a dot in front of the at Dory Clark in this case for wide exposure?
If the at Dory Clark that you have written in your text,
yes,
appears anywhere other than at the very beginning of it,
okay,
it will be a public thing. So it,
okay,
doesn't. It doesn't really matter if there's a period in front of at Dory Clark if it doesn't start off the tweet that way.
Okay, and you just cleared up something for me, because I think I misunderstood this a little bit. I thought that if you're following me and I'm following you, and I put a dot in front of the at sign, and I say at Dory Clark, thank you for the wonderful post, dot in front, that only if we were following each other would my tweet reach your followers and mine.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's a loop that I haven't heard, but you might know something, Jim, that I don't. So after we get off this call, I'm going to go research this question.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, because I've been trying to figure it out. And, of course, I think two heads are not necessarily better than one. But in this case, I think they are.
Yes.
And Dory, one more thing, too, if we may.
Yes.
As you know, we're be at NAB at the Women's Room. And as you know, you spoke there last year. Is there anything that we can say about NAB? Anything more that you would like us to say get out there? First, for example, I'm going to be mentioning your book to everyone I meet. Is there anything else that I should, that you'd like us to do?
Oh, well, it's very kind. No, I mean, I just, you know, I'll say I think it was a fantastic conference. They, you know, they really bring together a large, talented group. It seemed ripe for networking, and they gave me a bag last year, which I am still using. It's actually most conferences give you these crappy little bags, but this is actually a really great bag that you can use for you know, for like your airplane carry-on bag, and get a little pocket for an iPad. It's fantastic. So I give a thumbs up to NAB swag.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll be sure to pass along these ideas on branding to the folks at NAB that we meet at the Women's Room, which is the Alliance for Women in Media is sponsoring that. And remembering that we may need to change direction from time to time, but that's something that we can build into our current brand. Any parting thoughts here, other than all the wonderful information that is in Reinventing You, Redefine Your Brand, Imagine Your Future by Dory Clark?
Anything else, Dory, that you'd like to share or you want our listeners to know?
Well, I think, Jim, the most important thing is that many people think of reinvention and they may get a little nervous or a little paralyzed because they think, oh, well, I can't do some big reinvention. I don't want to do that, or I'm not capable somehow of doing that. And the trick really is that I think if we all get into a reinvention mentality where we understand that this isn't necessarily, I mean, you know, it could be if we wanted to, but it's not necessarily about making some huge leap in our life. It's about understanding that the world is changing fast and that as a result, we need to make small incremental improvements all the time, that reinvention should become just part of how we do business, that we always want to learn new things. That's what keeps us fresh and can keep our careers vital.
Okay, thank you so much. And we look forward to the next time you visit us. And on that show, I think we'll talk about that sort of thing in regard to women returning to the workforce and see what kind of special tweaks we can do on your overall reinvention plan under those circumstances. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dory.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.